Get ready for the greatest roast of all time. The Roast of Tom Brady. A Netflix live event happening May 5th. Hosted by Kevin Hart. The seven-time world champion gets his cleats held to the fire by famous friends and frenemies on an unforgettable night where everything is fair game. Tune in on May 5th at 5 p.m. Pacific time for The Roast of Tom Brady. Live only on Netflix.
You ready?
Showtime.
On May 3rd, summer starts with the Fall Guy.
What are you doing later?
Let's drink a spicy margarita.
Make some bad decisions.
Yes!
Audiences are falling in love with the most entertaining film of the year.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy.
That's what the poster said.
See Ryan Gosling and Emily Blunt in the movie critics say exists to make you happy.
Trying to make it out?
Nope.
Because I don't either. It's not what I'm into right now.
What are you into?
Talking.
Yeah. Okay.
The Fall Guy. Only in theaters May 3rd. Rated PG-13.
The LeBron, who can be, on occasion, the mentally weakest superstar I have ever closely observed. Here we go. Here we go. This is the Skip Bayless Show. On this episode of the podcast, I'll be reading and responding to your questions. If you'd like to have a question featured, remember to tweet at Skip Bayless Show on Twitter or leave your question with a 5-star review on Apple Podcasts. Feel free to ask me whatever you want about what goes on behind the scenes at Undisputed, my personal life, or anything in the world of sports. My answers will always be candid, be honest, and be unfiltered. Thanks for listening to the Skip Bayless Show. Enjoy the episode. Let's take a question from you, shall we? Let's go to Ian from Nevada. Ian asked, does your criticism of LeBron stem from your fear that LeBron might surpass Jordan as the GOAT? Ian, trust me, 1,000% big no. The only areas in which LeBron James will ever surpass Michael Jeffrey Jordan are just longevity records, because LeBron has now played 382 more games than Jordan ever did in the NBA. 382, that's going on 5 seasons more than Jordan played. Other than that, Jordan won 10 scoring titles to LeBron's 1. Jordan won a Defensive Player of the Year to LeBron's none. And maybe more important, Jordan never had one meltdown in one playoff series like LeBron did in 2010, that last go-around, the first time around in Cleveland against Boston. Remember games 4, 5, and 6? Cleveland owner Dan Gilbert subsequently accused LeBron of quitting in those games. Anybody ever accused Jordan of quitting? No. 2011 finals, I already mentioned the epic meltdown of LeBron James in games 4, 5, and 6. Followed up by the 2014 finals when LeBron's Heat got blown off the floor after 5 games by a record finals margin. Did that ever happen to Jordan? No. You can't scrub any of that off LeBron's legacy and resume. And in the end, we're looking at Jordan 6-0 in the finals with 6 finals MVPs to LeBron 4-6 in the finals. Jordan, as mentally tough a clutch superstar as I ever witnessed, versus a LeBron who can be, on occasion, the mentally weakest superstar I have ever closely observed. So, Ian, the only thing I fear is getting struck by lightning on the Undisputed set when my partner, LaShannon Sharp, dares to call LeBron James the GOAT already. He's proclaiming that for the last 6 years. Phony GOAT is as far as I can go. Another question. Jeremy from Joplin, Missouri, asks, what is the greatest NBA Finals in history? Okay, this one I might surprise you with because it's a personal preference. Obviously, I was there for every step of the way of Jordan's final Finals, Chicago, 1998. I was there, game six that night, the fairy tale ending. Jordan stole the ball from Karl Malone, dribbled it all the way up the floor with Scottie Pippen standing on the wing with his hands up. Give me the ball. Give me the ball. No. And Jordan, a little subtle push off of Brian Russell. Everybody pushed off in those days and got away with it. But Jordan rose up from near the free throw line and he held the post as the ball ripped through the net and through the hearts of those Utah fans. I was there for all of the above. Impossibly great, pure GOAT. But I'm not picking the 1998 Finals. No, I am going with, ready for this, 2013. LeBron's Heat versus my San Antonio Spurs. A Finals that ultimately ripped my heart out. But it was just so epic. You realize, if the Spurs had won that Finals, as they should have, they should have closed it out in game six. If they'd then gone ahead and won in 2014, as they did, you realize that Tim Duncan would have gone 6-0 in the Finals. 6-0 and matched that guy Jordan. Whew. So here we went, game one in Miami. Tony Parker stole it with a late shot off the glass. Heat bounced back in game two. LeBron blocked Tiago Splitter's quote-unquote jump shot, and Tiago can't jump any higher than I can. But that was the highlight of the game, even though LeBron scored only 17 and was outscored by Mario Chalmers on the Heat. Then we go to San Antonio. Spurs big in game three. Heat rally in game four. LeBron had 33, Dwayne 32. Spurs dominated game five to go up 3-2, but here's my personal preference. That week in San Antonio, I was there on my old show, First Take. Greatest week of my career. Never experienced anything like it because we did our shows outdoors on the Riverwalk in San Antonio. I became that week the mayor of San Antonio. I could not leave my hotel room without getting mobbed. I couldn't walk across the street from the hotel without getting mobbed because they loved it in San Antonio that I loved their Spurs. I'd been a longtime Spurs fan since the days of the Iceman, George Gervin. And those shows down on the Riverwalk, open to the public, were nothing but insane rock concerts, so loud that on the set we couldn't hear each other talk on live TV. It was divine lunacy. It was heavenly insanity. I will never forget it. And yet, we were there for those middle three games. It was the 2-3-2 format of old, and we had to go back to South Beach, and we had to go back to American Airlines Arena for game six. And you know what happened. My Spurs were up 5 points with 28 seconds left. Five with 28 seconds left. Ginobili missed a free throw. Kawhi missed a free throw. They have cordoned off the arena, ready to present the trophy to my Spurs. Heat fans are fleeing into the night out the exits. And somehow it came down to a last shot by LeBron James to tie, and he LeBricked it. He'd actually unraveled over the last 3 minutes of the game, had two turnovers in the last 1 minute of the game, three total over the last three. And yet, long rebound out to Chris Bosh, who kicked deftly into the corner to Ray Allen, who somehow got his feet behind the three-point line and made the greatest clutch shot I have ever witnessed. As painful as it is to admit, that made that the greatest Finals ever, because my Spurs could not get up off the mat
Ray shot them in the heart. They couldn't get off the mat for overtime nor for game seven. Kudos to LeBron. He was great in game seven against a team that was done. Done in by Ray Allen. Greatest finals ever.
We're driven by the search for better. But when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't to search at all. Don't search. Match with Indeed. If you need to hire, you need Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform with over 350 million global monthly visitors, according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. Ditch the busy work. Use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. And Indeed doesn't just help you hire faster. 93% of employers agree Indeed delivers the highest quality matches compared to other job sites, according to a recent Indeed survey. Join more than 3.5 million businesses worldwide that use Indeed to hire great talent fast. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/Bayless. Just go to Indeed.com/Bayless right now and support our show by saying you heard about Indeed on this podcast. Indeed.com/Bayless. Terms and conditions apply. Need to hire? You need Indeed.
Hey there. Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower-than-low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
Another quick question from Randy from New York. I'm guessing this is a Giants fan. How many jerseys do you think you'll throw in the trash this year? Speaking of my Dallas Cowboys. I have been known to go completely psycho after Cowboy losses. Over-emotionally overreact. And fire a Dak or Zeke jersey into the kitchen trash can. I've done it twice that I can remember. I lose it after they lose, especially when I am convinced they're going to win. So what just hit home from me was this week, Pro Football Focus ranked the top three players on every NFL team. Would you believe that my quarterback and my running back were not ranked in the top three on my team? It was Zach Martin. He'll be a Hall of Famer, but he's an aging offensive guard. And my man Micah, 11 from heaven, will make the Hall of Fame, I believe. I got to knock on some wood here for Micah and his health, but I believe he's Hall of Fame bound. And Tyron Smith, another aging offensive lineman, left tackle. But those are the top three. No Dak, no Zeke. Zeke looks washed to me. Dak has fallen back into the middle of the pack of quarterbacks. And when that hit home to me, it was so devastating that I decided, as I looked at Philly's upgrades, I'm just leaning toward picking the Eagles to win the East next year because they deserve to be picked because they probably had the best offseason any team had. They had a great draft. Not a good one, but a great one. And because of that, they're a little better than my Cowboys. So I truly fear Jalen Hurts, the playmaker quarterback that he is. I fear Philadelphia, that they're going to win the East next year. And I kind of like fearing them because it's going to take the pressure off me and off them for me not to pick them for once next year. My expectations will be none. So in the end, there'll be no reason, because there's no expectations, to throw my number four or my number 21 in the trash. So I kind of like it because next year, I believe my Dallas Cowboys are trash proof. Because I don't expect them to do much of anything but hover around 500 and finish second to the Eagles and miss the playoffs. Trash proof. Which brings me to my final question. This is for me and my wife, Ernestine, from Ian from Chino, California. What movie can you watch over and over without it ever getting old? That is a great question that I deeply appreciate, which brings me to two crazy confessions. I told you I was a little off, but Ernestine to this day makes fun of me over two movies that if they ever pop up on the movie channel when I have time, such as Saturday morning on the treadmill, or maybe Friday night as I'm waiting for her to finish preparing dinner for us, if they pop up and I've got a minute, I watch them like a zombie. And you will never guess what those two movies are, but I'm willing to confess to you why I love both, why I'm addicted to watching both, and I just watch them over and over with no thought. I just get absorbed into the screen, and I know every line and every plot twist, obviously. I know them cold. The first is Rounders. Rounders. I start watching and I can't stop watching because that final Texas Hold'em confrontation, the final showdown between Teddy KGB and the Matt Damon character, it just remains enthralling for me. And I know who wins. That's the point. I know who wins. But there's just something so convincing about John Malkovich as that taunting Russian bully who just as soon see Matt Damon's character broke and battered out in the back alley by his henchman grandma, who's a guy. And Malkovich just sells me on the fact that I fear him and I loathe him. And I find it deliciously satisfying that Matt Damon just cleans him out in the final confrontation. And to hear Malkovich, check, check, check. All you do is check, check, check. It just gives me chills to even say it right now. I'm addicted to watching Rounders because I love the competition and I love how Matt Damon's character wins the way he wins in the end. And then exits stage left with the money to pay off his professor who had loaned him his life savings. Says goodbye to Gretchen Mol, hops in the cab, and he is bound for the World Series of Poker Tournament in Las Vegas. I love that. I got that inside of me. Which brings me to my second movie I can't take my eyes off, and you won't believe this one either. It's Tin Cup. I'm addicted to Tin Cup because I play golf, and Tin Cup gets golf. It's so real to me. I relate to Kevin Costner's character, that go-for-broke driving range pro, who winds up leading the U.S. Open and refusing to lay up on the final hole and blowing the whole tournament by hitting, five shots in the water until he's got his down to his last golf ball and he tries it again with his 3-wood over the water on 18, the par 5, and he holds it just to prove to himself he could fly the water with that 3-wood. I got so much of that in me. I grew up playing all the gambling games that they play in Tin Cup. Part of me wants to be Roy McAvoy, the driving range pro. And please don't tell Ernestine I said this, but Rene Russo, as Roy's psychiatrist love interest, is, I'll just say, something. She is something. Me as a psycho golfer, if only I had Rene Russo as my shrink, I might break 80. Then again, Ernestine shocked me, actually, when I asked her which movie she could watch over and over again. With her answer, I didn't see this one coming. She said Die Hard. You would watch Die Hard over? I didn't even know that. She's watched it with me maybe 38 times, but I didn't think she would choose that. And yet she readily admitted to me she's into that young Bruce Willis. She says that was his sexiest, his coolest, his baddest. That moonlighting phase, Bruce Willis. And silly me, I love Die Hard because I love watching John McClane outwit and outfight the bad guys led by Hans Gruber. To me, the greatest villain ever in moviedom, because he's just so deliciously, diabolically evil, played by the late, great Alan Rickman. But Ernestine and I can look out our living room window and we can see Nakatomi Plaza, which is actually on Avenue of the Stars. It's the Fox Tower. I'm on the Fox lot here. But it's why Die Hard is near and actually literally near and dear to our hearts, because we can see the plaza. And obviously it takes place all in that plaza on Christmas Eve. Yet, just for the record, she and I do love our classic comedies, and we could watch these over and over, Caddyshack, Blazing Saddles, any of the Inspector Clouseau Pink Panther movies. But in the end, we both agreed if we had to pick just one over and over and over again, it would be Anchorman, because it so hilariously and brilliantly skewers and satirizes the TV business I live in and Ernestine knows so well. I have worked with several Ron Burgundies. I'm talking about pompous blowhards made for TV who take themselves way too seriously, but it works on TV. I got to tell you, the hit rate for jokes in Anchorman is the highest of any comedy ever, in my view. Just off the top of my head, Sex Panther. It's illegal in 9 countries, and it works 60% of the time, every time. 60% of the time, every time. Okay. And then Christina Applegate, as Veronica Corningstone, saying to Ron Burgundy, "Mr. Burgundy, you have a massive erection," is just all time for us. And we could watch that tonight again and laugh and laugh and laugh some more. I'm Ron Burgundy? No, I'm not. I think I'm still Skip Bayless, and that is it. Here we go.